I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer. On Tuesday mornings, we take deep dives into natural resource-based issues important to our region. On the first Tuesday of the month, our producer Mark Jacobs brings us guests who help us understand more about topics like today's. We continue with beavers. The iconic beaver, that's what we've been talking about in the last few months. Bill Berg was in with us, retired wildlife biologist, discussing the unique characteristics of the beaver and its considerable influence on the history of our region. But this morning, we're welcoming Thomas Gable from the University of Minnesota to talk about recent research regarding beaver in Minnesota. Welcome, Thomas, and welcome, Mark. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you both for joining us. Why don't you start off, Thomas, by telling us a little bit about the role of the University of Minnesota in the Voyageurs Wolf Project?
Absolutely. So the Voyageurs Wolf Project is a University of Minnesota research project. So we're based out of the University of Minnesota. Even though we study wolves in and around Voyageurs National Park in northern Minnesota, that's sort of our sort of home institution. And part of that work is studying, like I mentioned, wolves in and around Voyageurs National Park, and in particular, trying to understand their predation behavior and their population dynamics throughout the year. And so we use GPS collars and remote cameras to try to study them as best we can. And that part of the state has a lot of beavers in it. And so naturally, wolves consume quite a few beavers. So that's one of the unique aspects of our work.
Was that something that came as a surprise? I mean, when you began working with the wolves, were you aware that beavers were a big part of their diet?
So we knew from some previous work in Voyageurs National Park in the late 1980s, early 1990s, where they had collected scats and found beaver fur in a lot of those scats in the summer, that beavers were, to a degree, an important prey species, but it wasn't fully understood exactly to what extent. And wolf-beaver interactions really haven't been studied very well, even though wolves and beavers actually co-occur across large portions of the boreal forest in North America and Europe and Asia. People really haven't examined wolf-beaver interactions because it's difficult to study without modern technology, and because most people aren't that concerned if wolves are eating beavers all said and done. They're interested about wolves and deer, wolves and moose, and beavers. People are just like, great, they're eating beavers. Those beavers are cutting down my trees, so I don't really care.
Yeah, what's one less beaver?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So tell us about the Beaver Research Project.
Yeah, so it's an important thing to note here. So the project that we're going to talk about today about beaver research actually wasn't part of the Voyageurs Wolf Project. It was a colleague and a friend of mine who I had met actually when I first started doing work in Voyageurs. His name was Dr. Sean Johnson Bice, and at that time he was a graduate student at the University of Minnesota Duluth, and his work was studying beaver dynamics on the North Shore in Minnesota. And so that's the work we're going to talk about today, and I was a collaborator helping on that. Was trying to understand how beavers influenced that ecosystem along the North Shore of Minnesota and how beaver populations sort of were woven into that.
There was some research done on beavers and I think wolves in Yellowstone that was pretty surprising in the effects that both had on the environment there. And I'm wondering, were there aspects of this study that sort of reinforced or taught you things that you weren't aware of in terms of the beaver and its relationship to the land and what happens on the land?
So I'll start with the Yellowstone. So that's a really interesting one. So for a long time, that had been sort of the popular narrative coming out of a lot of the work in Yellowstone. But there's actually been a couple of pretty sizable analyses done the past couple of years, which have shown that actually, that story out of Yellowstone about how wolves came and they helped, you know, they reduced the elk or changed the elk behavior, which brought back the beavers, that story actually doesn't have a lot of support behind it when you really start digging into the evidence over the long term. Now, obviously, that doesn't stop sort of it's been worked into sort of the fabric of popular science and things like that. So I don't expect that will be or it will be slow to sort of correct that. But the science has come out, and there's been some very unique analyses and really rigorous work done to show that wolves actually didn't come in and sort of save that ecosystem like it's often portrayed. They are an important part of it. And that's probably the same we have in northern Minnesota, where wolves themselves are not necessarily, let's say, saving the wilderness, but they play a role and influence certain aspects. And particularly by killing beavers, and that's what our work has shown, is that wolves will actually kill, when they kill beavers, they actually alter how far from water beavers will forage, which then in turn impacts forests around wetlands. And then wolves will also kill beavers that are creating new wetlands and actually prevent wetlands from being formed in certain areas. And so that's what we found in the Voyagers Wolf Project. Now, when we did our work on the North Shore with looking at beaver population dynamics there, what we did is we used aerial images going back to the 1940s, and we digitized, so traced out all of the beaver ponds from the 1940s to the, I believe it was like 2017 or so. And obviously, we weren't getting imagery every year, but there were sort of images taken every 5, 6, 8 years, sometimes closer. And you could look at how beavers, as they sort of recovered in the state of Minnesota, and that's an important thing to note, is that when these images were starting to be taken in the 1940s, beavers were not hyperabundant because their populations had been depleted from overtrapping and things like that. So they were still recovering during that time. And so what we got to basically see is the change on the landscape as those beaver populations sort of recolonized the environment, and how did the environment change? And that's what made it so fascinating, because we had, I think it was 75 years of data through aerial images, which is a very long study for most wildlife studies, to be able to understand what impact did beavers have on the landscape as they started to sort of settle along these North Shore tributaries and streams and things like that. And what was really interesting is we looked at 5 different watersheds as part of that study. And the watersheds were kind of scattered along the North Shore there. And what was interesting is that as time went on, the watersheds didn't always do the same thing. So beaver populations in those watersheds were doing different things through time. And so each individual watershed kind of had its own trajectory, but the overall population had sort of a sort of unique, stable trajectory, even though the other ones are kind of fluctuating. So there's a lot of variation from watershed to watershed, but a lot of population level stability. And as beavers started recolonizing the North Shore of Minnesota, the ponds that they first started building were very large. And that's probably because beavers were finding the best places to set up dams. They'd make a dam in a small spot and it would flood a huge pond. But then as time went on and there became more and more beavers on the landscape, what we started to notice is that the ponds started to get smaller and smaller. So what once was a really big pond would then maybe get built and split up into 2 smaller ponds as beavers sort of came in and dammed up the stream a little bit further upstream. And so as you basically packed more beavers in, there became more and more ponds on the landscape, but they were smaller than when the beavers were sort of first colonizing the area. And so what that meant is that through time, the amount of surface area, water surface area that beavers were sort of holding back by their dams actually remained fairly stable through time from like the 1950s to the early 2000s. But that was just because when beavers first started, they were building these really big ponds. Then by the time, you know, current day, a lot of those ponds are much smaller. They hold less water, even though there's a lot more of them on the landscape. And so for us, that was really fascinating because that's not what you would expect. You'd expect that as beaver densities sort of increased through time, that we would just have an increasing amount of surface water stored in these ecosystems. And there was sort of a trend in that, but because beaver populations don't continue increasing, you know, exponentially through time, those populations sort of leveled off, and so did the amount of surface area or surface water that was stored in their wetlands.
So, and I know from personal experience, I have beavers on the lake that I live in, and you can mm-hmm. see in the popple forest, you can see in the aspen forest, just how far they're willing to go. There can be a perfectly delicious aspen tree 10 feet further than the last one they cut, and they won't go there and cut that one. If you have this very large pond, mm-hmm. the amount of aspen cut around it would be less than if you had like several small ponds. Is that correct? I mean, am I seeing that
absolutely
right?
Absolutely. So the size of Yeah, so the size of the pond is important to think about because from a beaver's perspective, you know, they're looking for, like you said, easy food close to the water. And so you have a big pond, you have a big circumference or shoreline, and so there's a lot more trees that are more accessible right by the shoreline. And so probably at a lot of when beavers first colonized or recolonized parts of northern Minnesota, they probably found a buffet of aspens, which allowed them to get a lot of food close to the water. But as time goes on and beavers have lived in those environments for longer and longer, they start depleting the aspens that are really close to the water. And so that means they have to either go further inland, and that's a risky choice and with predators and things like that, or move somewhere else and start another pond, or potentially start changing to foods like aquatic vegetation. And that's probably something that's going on in part two, is that when beavers first recolonized in Minnesota, there were not that many beaver ponds on the landscape anymore because beavers had been absent for a very long time. So a lot of those wetlands had been drained that beavers might have created in, I don't know, hundreds of years ago. But as beavers, and so when they set up that or start damming up that river, there's not a lot of abundant aquatic vegetation in those ponds right away. But as those ponds get older and older, they start getting really dense lily pads and other aquatic vegetation that beavers can rely on, which means they might not have to forage in the woods so far. So maybe even if they've depleted some of the deciduous vegetation around their ponds, they might have more in their pond, which allows them to occupy that. And we see this a lot in the Voyageurs area, where you go around to some of the ponds that we know have been there 70, 80 years, and you look around the pond and you just kind of like, there doesn't seem to be any good food around this pond. There's not very many aspen trees. It's all conifers. And so all we suspect is that they're largely relying on that aquatic vegetation. And a lot of those ponds have abundant aquatic vegetation in them.
That's really interesting. I had no idea that they would eat, what is it, cattail or lily pads or both? The roots of
they'll eat both. And yeah, sometimes you'll see in the spring, if you go to beaver ponds right after the ice has gone out, you'll see actually the what are called the rhizomes of the lily pads, which are down in the water, and they kind of look like weird pineapple potato looking things. I don't know how to describe it very well. But they'll be floating on the water after the ice is on, because that's what the beavers have been under there eating those in the wintertime. And then as the ice goes, they all start floating. So they'll eat a lot of different kinds of aquatic vegetation. And actually, if you look in some aerial imagery of beaver ponds in the summertime when all the aquatic vegetation is in full bloom, you can actually see all the little channels through that aquatic vegetation where beavers have sort of dug it out and also probably consumed any aquatic vegetation that's growing in those areas.
I've noticed that, and I also noticed that in my particular lake, there are some wetlands that are more sedge meadow type things, and they'll gnaw a path, you know, to take them back to a stand of aspen or something where they can get after some food back there. And these tracks are they're treacherous if you happen to be walking through there and not looking where you're stepping.
Yes, especially in the summer once those areas have drained and you can't see, and you know, those canals are pretty tricky. But it's amazing. I mean, when you really think about it, it's amazing to think that these little rodents have basically excavated out channels, right, in the mud to then get further inland to help them get food. I mean, every time I see them, it's just like, that's a lot of work for, you know, especially look at a beaver. They've only got their front claws aren't very big, right? And so they're just, I guess, just digging at those things slowly but surely.
And do they make those channels all times of the year? Is it a winter thing or?
It's usually a spring to fall sort of thing. It probably serves two purposes. The first is that it allows them to get closer to land in deep water, which means they have an escape potentially if they encounter a predator like a wolf or a bear or something like that. And then the other is that it helps save energy for them when they're transporting trees back to their pond. Because you can imagine, you know, if a beaver cuts a large aspen down, they've got to somehow move all of that wood back into their pond. And I mean, anyone who's cut a big aspen with a chainsaw or something knows the amount of work that is. And beavers have to use their teeth to slide them back into to their pond. And so those canals mean that they can float them back as opposed to have to drag them over land, which can be hard work.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, I've stepped in those channels more than once and went over my waders.
Well, I mean, it's pretty amazing how deep some of those can be, especially when those ponds are full. I mean, those things can be 4, 5, 6 feet deep sometimes, depending on the water levels of the pond.
I remember duck hunting one time and stepping in one, not knowing it was there, and right over on my face, gun right into the mud, and just like, what have I done? What is that?
Yep.
Yeah. Well,
so how did those impacts on the local ecology impact other wildlife species over that time? Do you have any sense on that?
We don't know how they impacted, let's say, a lot of wildlife over time in that specific environment, but there has been a substantial amount of work across North America and Europe looking at basically how do beavers benefit other species by altering environments. And obviously, you know, one of the major ways that beavers have benefited, let's say, wildlife in Minnesota is by creating wetland habitats, which, you know, there were some wetlands when you go to the 1940s, 30s, but there weren't nearly as many as there currently are. And that's because beavers are damming up these, you know, creeks, creating slow moving water areas, placed with aquatic vegetation. And so you see waterfowl, you know, lots of folks, you know what waterfowl can look like on a beaver pond in the fall as you have migrating birds coming through. The way that they change forest habitats as well, you know, they cut down aspen trees, they convert some areas around beaver ponds to conifer dominant species types, or just to young shrubby habitat, which can benefit certain songbirds. Obviously, they create lots of habitat for otters and other small mammals, mink, things like that. You know, places for moose to go get forage, and deer will go on beaver ponds. So there's all sorts of ways when beavers have engineered landscapes that they positively influence a lot of species on the landscape.
Tom, we've used up most of our time, but just as final thoughts, any concerns for beavers, their future in Minnesota? Are they going to be fine, or are they going to be eaten by wolves?
I don't think wolves aren't going to be a problem for beavers in Minnesota, and I don't see anything that would really impact beavers at this time. They're a pretty resilient species, all said and done, and the main reason why we sort of lost beavers in Minnesota and a lot of the U.S. is just really intensive harvest. And since that's not going on anymore, I think beavers are here to stay in Minnesota and will probably remain pretty abundant as we move forward in the future.
Sounds like it'll be good for all animals all around.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you, Tom. Thank you, Mark. Great programming as always. Appreciate you coming on, Tom, and telling us all this interesting stuff, and for disabusing me of that notion about Yellowstone. Thank you. I'm always
absolutely.
Happy.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.